Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help members of the military community identify, obtain, and pursue their ideal post-service career. Today is episode number 351, Veteran Careers in Education with Darris McInnes.
I can lesson plan all day, right? Like, I can go home and say, I'm going to do this lesson, read this book, do these activities. But as I'm going and I'm teaching my kids, and I find that a lot of my kids really don't like these sorts of activities, or they really don't like these sorts of books, or they're not being represented in these sorts of books, that's another component to it too.
Often on interviews, my guests talk about how, after they leave the military, they struggle to find a purpose, mission, or calling like they had in the military. One of the things I love about my guest today, Darris, is that his time since the military has been spent addressing a new purpose. I haven't had anyone on the show before to talk about the education space. Darris has spent time as a teacher, leading a classroom of four-year-olds. He talks about how this is one of the best and most challenging jobs he's ever had, and how it taught him resilience, leadership, and perseverance. He has continued in education, now as a full-time doctoral student at Penn's Graduate School of Education. He talks about meeting two different U.S. presidents all in one crazy day and more. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, there's show notes with a full list of all the resources that Darris mentions today, as well as a text transcript thanks to Kathleen Dillon. There's also over 350 other episodes just like this one, completely free. So with that, let's dive into my conversation with Darris. Joining me today in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, my guest is Darris McInnes. Darris, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you for having me, Justin. I appreciate it.
So excited to have Darris on the show. I think that we're going to cover a lot of ground that we haven't covered on Beyond the Uniform before. And with 350 of these episodes, that's a rarity. To give you a sense of where we're going, Darris is a full-time doctoral student at Penn's Graduate School of Education. He's also a summer learning curriculum specialist at the Free Library of Philadelphia. Prior to all of this, he served as an early childhood teacher in Washington, D.C. He also served as an education pioneer in New Orleans, and he has spent 5 years on active duty as an ordnance logistics officer in the United States Army. And so, Darris, maybe to start things off, anything not mentioned in the bio that you want to make sure listeners know about you?
I grew up in Flint, Michigan, originally, and then my father actually joined the Army, and so I ended up moving around the country and kind of growing up everywhere before settling in Texas and then joining the military myself.
Awesome. Well, let's start with your own transition and kind of walk us through what the transition was like from the Army and what direction you headed in afterwards.
Oh, good question. Well, originally the plan was to do what so many of us do as junior officers, to go into middle management. I had a few prospects with some jobs around the DC area. I had been in Fort Lee, Virginia as I was separating, and I knew, and I'd actually gone up to DC a few times, and I said, wow, this is where I wanna be. But volunteering with some schools in the Petersburg area with my unit and seeing some of the issues happening in those schools, the schools were losing accreditation. Students, their attendance rates were really, really low. And it was coming to my end of my contract. And I just really honestly, I said, you know, maybe I have a different calling. Perhaps middle management isn't where I'm needed most, or maybe I won't be happy there. And I tried my hand with thinking about teaching. I looked up Troops to Teachers, ProudToServeAgain.com. I was sort of browsing through some of the things that they offered and the assistance that they provided for veterans. I told my command team, I said, I'm gonna go and teach children. Wish me luck. And honestly, everything just, it really just kind of worked out. I mean, I know that that's a really cliche thing to say, but it just worked out the way that it was supposed to.
Was that difficult? I'm just imagine going into like my commanding officer and telling them I'm not going into the more tried and true path of middle management and instead going into childhood education, which you're honestly one of the first veterans I can think of who took that path. Was that a difficult conversation to have?
It really, I wouldn't say it was difficult in the outcome, but definitely going to my commander, it was a little challenging for me. Fort Lee's very close to Richmond, and there was a really big wave of us junior officers who left from the unit, and went to work for Honeywell. And when I told him that I wanted to get out and I wanted to transition, he assumed that that's where I was going to go. And when I told him, I said, well, actually, I think I want to go into education. I didn't know that it would be teaching, but I knew that I wanted to work in education. And from that point, he sat me down and talked with me about how I would make significantly less money, how so many people leave the teaching profession, and also whether or not I had the skills to actually do it. My commander was very supportive of me. He encouraged me to read as much as I could on teaching, on education in general. And from there, that's when I found the Ed Pioneers program.
Was he right? I mean, I'm just curious, like because the perception is right, like battle-hardened warrior going into a classroom, there might not be nurturing, they might not be warm. I'm just kind of curious for people who might hold the same beliefs, what you would say to them.
I think that he was right. I think with us transitioning into any field, anything that anyone does outside of the military is just so different. But I do believe that it was a steep learning curve for me. I found Ed Pioneers first prior to going to teaching. And I think that was an easier transition going from the Army to Ed Pioneers. That was easier for me. A year after that, going into teaching, it was really difficult. I do think that veterans, we get a very bad rap for not being people who are nurturing. I think that we also get a bad rap for people who are not empathetic and understanding. So I do think that teaching absolutely requires those things of us. And I also believe that much of your preparation going from the military into education is really just understanding, thinking about why you're doing it. Is it that you're wanting to be in education from a social justice perspective? Did you have an experience like I did volunteering in Petersburg schools while I was still in? Or do you just love working with children? I think that the why, what will help you identify those things within you to be nurturing, to be encouraging, to be uplifting. But then there are also things that I think work to our benefit. The fact that we learn grit in the military, you need that in classrooms. The fact that we're adaptable, and the fact that you absolutely have to be selfless, because every child in your classroom will need something different from you, and it takes humility, takes sacrifice, and tons of patience.
I can only imagine. What was that training like that you got with Education Pioneers, and how long was that program?
So Education Pioneers it's an organization that serves people who are making a transition into education to serve from outside the classroom. So for me, I got out of the military on June the 7th. I drove to New Orleans from Fort Lee, still in my uniform and boots, and I started the 10th. So I was still like, it's so funny to look at myself in pictures from back then. I'm like standing at attention whenever we take group photos, and you know, I still have my shaved face. But the training was very much so thinking about how to take your skills that you already have, albeit in business, in finance, in logistics, and how to use those skills in education. So whether that's in curriculum support, or if you're designing professional development for teachers, or if you're working in operations in schools, there are different things that you can do and bring to education from whatever field you're in. So this wasn't really pedagogy specific. This was more sort of taking skills that you already learned and bringing it into the field to support education from outside the classroom.
That's great. And then from there, what age group were you teaching, and what was that experience like?
Well, it kind of a funny story. So I worked at Paul Habens Charter School, which is under the Crescent City School network in New Orleans. And when Paul Habens was a school that was a part of the Orleans Parish School Board prior to me getting there, and Crescent City Schools was sort of doing this takeover of the school. And so this entailed doing some design around the school, painting the building, restructuring everything around it. And so one of the things that I did was some of the parents came in and they read books, they registered their kids with the school and spoke with adults. One of the things that I got to do was I got to read stories with the kids, like while they were waiting for their parents to get done. And one of the staff members, she asked me, she said, have you ever thought about doing this? Have you ever thought about teaching? I was like, no, I couldn't do this. there's no way. I do want to work in education, but probably not in that capacity. But then I gave it some thought. And I knew that I wanted to go to DC. So from New Orleans, I went to DC. I remember watching a TED talk with Aletta Margolis when I was overseas, so active duty. And she started in a program called the Inspired Teaching Program. And I didn't have a job. I just finished the fellowship with Ed Pioneers in New Orleans. So I drove from New Orleans back to the East Coast in DC, sort of just living on some money I saved up from the Army. And when I went to Ed Pioneers, I had the impression I was gonna work with high schoolers, because my first experience really working with kids was when I was volunteering in Fort Lee in the Petersburg schools, because I worked with high schoolers there. And when I met the staff, there was a very nice young lady named Monisha, who's still a friend of mine today. She said, I think that you'd be good with small kids. I was like, oh, no. I don't think so. I don't think that I could, but you don't really have too much of a say-so when you're paired up with your resident teacher. But my very first class that I was paired up in was with 4-year-olds. And Justin, let me tell you, it's... You know, I was pretty fearful to go to basic training. I was pretty fearful to go into my first unit, but the fear I had standing up in front of 4-year-olds, it's indescribable. I was terrified. But I spent a full year with a resident teacher. Her name was Hannah Salisbury. She was fantastic. I learned so much. So I was in the classroom with her. I was teaching with her, I was planning with her, I was playing with the kids, I was meeting their families, I was engaging in the lessons, trying my hands at read aloud, and it was a learning curve. oh my goodness, it was, I felt like I failed at everything. I just kept, felt like I was failing, but in essence, that's really what I think good teaching boils down to. Not necessarily the failing part, but just understanding that it is a craft that takes a very, very long time to understand And honestly, figuring out what works in a general education classroom that will serve all of your kids, it's really intimidating, honestly. But I found the training to be very helpful. So not only did I have a resident teacher, I also had mentors who came in to do observations on me and to give me some helpful feedback. The staff from the Inspired School supported us. I started a master's in early childhood education, so I had that support as well. So it was just, and I had my cohort members, people who I was going through with it. I think we started out with about 31 people, so there were so many of us. Some people who I'm still friends with today and who are still in the classroom.
My wife started her career in education, and I'm really intimidated by the thought of what you're doing. Is like the thought of managing a diverse classroom of kids with different personalities and needs, and trying to present to that audience and captivate their attention. I mean, it's overwhelming to think about the skill needed to really effectively engage a group like that. How did you, I mean, it seems like you had a good support system. How did you stay sane amidst all of that chaos?
I think that's such a good question. I think the most important thing is that I love working with kids. Kids are, they are all the things that you said. And being in a classroom is all the things that you said. But I think that really just enjoying being around kids and being in their presence and understanding that it was an honor for me to be in front of them is one really big piece. Another piece is understanding that we all share dual roles. So not only are you a teacher in the classroom, but you're also a learner. You're learning from your kids, from their experiences, from their context. So the diversity piece that you mentioned is really important, because every child brings something new to the classroom. And I think that the most important lesson I learned as a teacher is how to use all the different experiences, how to bring all the different experiences into our lessons, and how to reflect on our practice in tandem with the context they bring, the experiences they bring, and kind of shaping what I'm doing as we go. I can lesson plan all day, right? Like I can go home and say, I'm going to do this lesson, this lesson, this lesson, read this book, do these activities. But as I'm going and I'm teaching my kids, and I find that a lot of my kids really don't like these sorts of activities, or they really don't like these sorts of books, or they're not being represented in these sorts of books, that's another component to it too.
It's interesting, the, you know, thinking, because it's such a rare path that you've taken, but the element that you seem to share from the military is like this ability to react in the moment and make decisions and go with things. Like, it's not like people make battle plans and they execute that. It's like it seems like in the classroom, you're creating your battle plan, and then in the moment you're having to shift with it's again, it's very difficult for me to understand how that would even be possible, to be able to see where you're losing people, where you're gaining people. And like, it's like an unbelievable improv comedy type experience of just being in the moment and being able to adapt. That's a pretty crazy skill set to have.
It is. I think for me, I do think that my personality helped. I think what the military gave me was the adaptability, and was just the experience with being able to change with the terrain, right, and the environment and things that are happening around us. But I do think that because I'm such a big kid at heart, I think that really gave me some buy-in with my kids. Because I think that as an early childhood educator, one of the things that helps you become more successful in the classroom is getting your hands dirty with the kids. So if they're rolling around on the carpet pretending to be, like a farm animal, you're rolling around too. If they're using paint and they're making a mess and they're splashing, you know, things all over the table, you're doing all of that too. If they're putting on costumes and playing dress up and reenacting and retelling their stories, you're doing that with them. So I think that that helps. I think building that relationship with them is just a key component to being able to be adaptive, because you understand them, you understand their needs, and it just helps you become more responsive to what they're doing.
That's awesome. I want to cover two things for people who are kind of intrigued by this career path. The first is the resources you would recommend. And I know that you've talked about Education Pioneer Fellowship and Troops to Teachers, Inspired Teacher Cert Program. So I'd love to kind of give a little bit more context there. And then I'd also love to have you talk about the pros and cons, kind of like what people may really like about this career path, and then the things that people need to consider that they might not like about it.
Sure. Well, as people know, there's always the traditional way to become a teacher. This is enrolling at a university where you're spending time learning how to be a teacher, you're learning pedagogy, you're doing your student teaching, and usually where you're going to school, they'll sort of tailor what they're doing in their teacher prep program based on the state requirements. And as you know, the GI Bill can cover those costs for you in school. If you do have the Montgomery or the Post 9/11, you can use that to supplement your income and to use that to go through the teacher training in the university. And then you have some alternative programs, particularly for people who already have a bachelor's degree, sort of like post-bac programs, one of which I think for my go-to, it was going to Troops to Teachers. That's proudtoserveagain.com. The really neat thing there is they have an interactive map on their website with every state and the specific requirements for getting a teacher certification. If you want a more specialized credential, for instance, special education or reading specialist, you may want to do research on how the state does the certification for that, because every state is different. Some states will require a teacher to have a general certification prior to getting what they call an endorsement for special ed or to become a reading specialist. When I transitioned in 2013, I needed a minimum of 7 years of active duty to qualify for the stipend for Troops of Teachers. So that's something to keep in mind. But if you are a veteran, they do provide informational help. They do references. They can sort of guide you into taking the praxis or whatever test a state needs for you to become a certified teacher. There are other programs. There's the American Board for the Certification of Teacher Excellence. It's a ABCTE. So they have certification programs in 11 states. And then there's Teach for America, which I believe they're in 26 states. And there's the New Teacher Project, which I believe is now just called TNTP. There's Relay GSC. I don't endorse any of these programs. I've never used them myself, but I do know that they do provide alternative certification programs for people. And I think some of them have sort of an emphasis on recruiting veterans to put them into the classroom in high needs areas. There are tons of programs available at the national level as well as the state level. So I would recommend that people just first start with proudtoserve.com. They have just a list of so many different things there for veterans with getting involved in teaching and making that transition from wearing the uniform to carrying an apple, which I like to say. And then pros and cons. Well, I think the pros are, I think veterans bring a very unique set of skills into the classroom. I think that the pros of going through an alternative certification program like I did, one was the support network, just like I mentioned earlier. Another point is having a cohort. So you're going through this with so many other people who are feeling the same things that you are. Perhaps not quite the same because they're not veterans. So there'll be some things that you'll experience that they won't, right? Because you're sort of coming back into the civilian world and integrating yourself with not going to work every day, sort of having that, the military mentality, but you know, you do have to kind of shape your thinking a little differently. And another pro is, I think certification programs, I think they do a really good job of helping people from different backgrounds think about why it is they want to become a teacher and how to use these skills that they already have in the classroom. Some of the cons, that's a good question. I don't think there's enough research on how alternative certification programs can support veterans. I don't know if there are enough of us in the field to provide that data. So there were things that I know I needed personally from a certification program. For instance, just thinking about how to use my GI Bill in my schooling to get my master's in early childhood, that was a bit of a struggle. No one knew how that worked. They hadn't had veterans before. So that was a con. I think another con is I don't know that transition, like protocol in the military, prepares you to be a teacher. I don't know that it does that very effectively. I think that the DODEA, which is the Department of Defense Education and Activity, which is what a Troops of Teachers operates under, I know, I think that they've had some recent efforts in trying to help with transition people from the military into teaching. But when I was coming out of the military, that really wasn't available for me.
And could you share, you had the opportunity to meet both President Clinton and President Obama. Could you share a little bit more about the context for that and what that was like?
Sure. So when I entered the Inspired Teaching Program in 2014, this was the 20th year of AmeriCorps. And as Inspired Teachers, we were sworn in as AmeriCorps members because the work that we were doing in DC satisfied the requirements for us to be AmeriCorps members. They were looking at some of their partner organizations, so Inspired Teaching and some different organizations throughout the city of DC. They were inviting people, they were looking for people to come do the swearing in person. So they asked people to submit like a very small blurb about what AmeriCorps service means to them. So I wrote probably a sentence or two about the uncertainties I had with transitioning from being a soldier to now a teacher. I got an email from a White House staff member. He said, "Hey, I like what you said about transitioning from being a soldier to a teacher. Would you be interested in coming to meet President Obama?" And at the time, I didn't know that President Clinton would be there as well. And I was like, would I like to meet President Obama? Yeah, of course, right? but I responded yes. He said, "Okay, are you available to talk via phone?" I said, "Sure." So I got on the phone. He asked me a ton of questions about my background, because I think that at the time they were crafting President Obama's speech to give at the anniversary and giving him some things that he wanted to talk about. So I think he was trying to sort of gauge what he wanted to highlight in his speech. And I was speaking with the person about my experience. Maybe 2 hours later, he emailed me and said, okay, you're coming to meet President Obama. By the way, President Clinton will also be there. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. I was so, I couldn't believe it, honestly. His instructions, you know, he gave me the location, which side of the White House to enter, the time, where what I needed to wear. I couldn't wear any bags. You know, be presentable because we're going to take some pictures. And most importantly, don't tell anyone. I couldn't tell my mom. I couldn't tell my friends. I couldn't say a word to anyone. And so I showed up the next day. Oh, and I forgot to mention that they asked me if I wanted to meet both of the presidents, just because I think I was very unique in the 20th anniversary of AmeriCorps. I don't think there was anyone else transitioning from being in the Army into teaching. But fast forward back to that day, I showed up at the White House and I was pinching myself all morning. I didn't sleep the night before. I was just excited and nervous all at the same time. And you know, it was really surreal. But when we got in and there were me and probably about four or five other people, we met them and they were very nice. They were just excited as I was. So that kind of helped ease my anxiety. And we were in this room and we were just waiting, and like, you could see Secret Service come pouring in, and like my heart's just racing. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is really happening. I just don't want to faint. As long as I don't faint or throw up on President Obama, then, you know, I'm good, right? as long as I don't throw up on the president or President Clinton, then I'm okay. President Obama came in first, and I just remember my feet were so firmly planted into the ground. My hands were shaking. My mouth was dry. And he was, the first thing I noticed was how tall both of them were. I'm only 5'5", and I'm looking up, and I'm like, wow, they're both really super tall. And President Obama is just like, I know that there are so many jokes about like his swag and how he carries himself, but it really is true. He just lights up a room. Right? He's just this very charismatic, very nice, very genuine person who I was just in awe. He, you know, I told him that he was my hero. I told him that I was a really big fan of his, and I told him how excited I was to transition from the Army into teaching. And then President Clinton came in right behind him. President Clinton is just as, his personality is just really, really big, and he's really super chatty and very friendly. I told him I was from Flint, Michigan. He was like, oh, I know people from Flint. Let me tell you about this time when I did this and this. I mean, he was just, I was like, wow, I'm just regular old me. And he's telling me about, you know, some people from Flint, Michigan. And then we were getting together for this group picture after everyone shook the president's hands. And like, President Obama put his hand on my shoulder. He was like, hey, can you go stand over here by Clinton? And I'm like shaking. I mean, just trembling, right? Like, I'm like, oh my God, like President Obama just touched my shoulder, you know? But it was an experience that I can't wait to tell my kids one day, you know, when I have kids and my grandkids, and I tell the story to my students every year. It was an experience that I just thank God for. I'm so grateful for it. It really sort of solidified for me that I was exactly where I was supposed to be. I had a lot of doubts before getting out of the military, you know, with only like 5 years. And I didn't know if teaching was where I was supposed to be. And that, for that to happen at the very beginning of my teaching career, it was very affirming.
That's so awesome. That's so great. You mentioned earlier the selflessness required to be a teacher, and I'm just curious if you have any advice or tips on, because I think that's such a valuable trait no matter what career people go into, and any advice on practices to become more selfless or others oriented?
I think the most important thing is to stay informed, to read as much as you can, and pay attention to the things happening around you. Pay attention to the things that your kids in your classroom tell you, and pay attention to things that their families tell you as well. I think teaching requires just so much sacrifice of your time and your energy, and it encompasses so many different things. I think the most important part is to stay informed, to read as much as you can, to understand the issues that are happening in your community and as they relate to your profession as a teacher. I think the second thing is getting involved in your community. Mm-hmm. So getting, just being informed about those issues and how they're impacting your kids. I was a volunteer with the Homeless Children's Playtime Project in DC while I taught, because I understood that while I was teaching kids, I just found out about so many other issues happening outside of the school and around DC. And playtime provided play opportunities for children in transitional housing. And I think that the last part will be to be more inclusive. We're in times now where, you know, we have neurodiversity, and we're talking about introducing yourself with your pronouns when you meet a person, and thinking about the different ways all of us sort of navigate through this world. I think that that helps inform your practice. I think that it makes you more aware of some issues that your students may face or that their families may face. And I think that all of this sort of ties into the selflessness. I do have a caveat though. I think that with all this in mind, I also think that you have to make time to take care of yourself. Volunteering is great. Thinking about issues that affect your community, that's great. And taking that outside time to reflect on things happening in the world as a teacher, that's great. But also, I don't think that you're good for anyone else if you're not good to yourself. If you're just run down or burn out, it's very hard for you to be selfless and to be there for your kids. So take breaks, make time for things that bring you joy, and rejuvenate, because teaching is a profession like no other.
Mm. I love the empathy of that, of just kind of like really understanding where people are coming from and what their backgrounds are, and the ways in which you are involved in the community to get that knowledge. And I love the counterbalance that too, of like taking care of yourself and not being so into being selfless that you don't take care of yourself, because then you're not going to be good to anyone. I think that's a great answer. I'd love for you to give some info to listeners about what you're up to now, like what led to that transition, and what you want them to know about where you're spending your time and energy.
Sure. Being in the classroom is the best job that I've ever had to date. What led to coming to graduate school is being in the classroom and feeling like research didn't inform my practice enough with giving young children more agency in the classroom and giving teachers more tools to investigate how to bring kids into curriculum and how to consider them in pedagogy. Really sort of, as I said earlier, thinking about the ways in which kids come into the classroom with their own context and their own ideas, how to bring that into the practice. So I wanted to go and try my hands at applying to grad school and seeing if I could be the person to make these discoveries in education to help include children's voices into our practice, and to figure out new ways to support teachers in bringing their kids more to the forefront of their pedagogy. And so coming to Penn GSC, one, I have no regrets. I do miss my kids very, very much, and I'm still in contact with their families. And I still try to go to birthday parties and things like that. But being a Penn GSC now, so one thing that I'm doing is I'm also working at the Free Library as a summer learning curriculum specialist, because I was really interested in children and how they learn outside of school, particularly during the summertime when school's not in. What are they doing outside of school, and how are they learning, and what's happening with all of that? I don't know if you're familiar with the concept of the summer slide, but that's the learning loss that happens from the time the kids end a school year to the time they begin a new school year. So I'm just really interested in studying sort of that concept and how children's literacies can be affected, or how they inform that concept. So that's where my research is headed now. And being at Penn GSC is great. I think I'm a person who just enjoys being in cohorts. So I was in a cohort in Air Pioneers. I was in a cohort in Inspired Teaching, excuse me. And now I'm in a cohort at Penn GSC. And I love the people who I'm working with, and the people in different departments and in different areas around the school. And it's really challenging a lot of the preconceived notions I had of what teaching was. And I have come to find out that there is tons of research on how to bring kids into the center and how to have children-focused pedagogy. It's just not as prevalent in school curriculum as I think that it should be, because things in education tend to rely very much on money and test results and how kids test and assessments. And I think me taking a more qualitative approach with the professors I'm working with, I'm studying under Dr. Vivian Gadsden, and she's really pushing my thinking about what it is that I'm trying to investigate, thinking about how I define what literacy is, and thinking about what measures we need to take in education and outside of it to do right by our kids.
That's awesome. I love the way that you're developing mastery and learning from all of these different places and building more and more skills and knowledge. And the last thing I just wanted to ask is, for anyone interested in the education space, are there any resources, apart from the websites you've already provided that I'll have in the show notes at beyonduniform.org, any books or podcasts or anything else that you think might assist them that we could add to the show notes?
Two books that I've recently read that I wish that I read prior to coming to teaching. One of which is Negotiating Critical Literacies with Young Children by Vivian Vasquez. That book completely changed my way of thinking about what it means to educate young children, what they bring into the education space and their ideas, and just really thinking about how they see the world and how we can use their knowledge and their experience and their context to shape our thinking, and how we can come into a classroom space with an inquiry-based mind frame as opposed to one that is prescriptive, because I don't believe that we come into a space with all of these things to teach kids. I think that we can learn just as much, if not more, from them than vice versa. The other is Pedagogy of the Oppressed, particularly, this is by Paulo Freire. That book really, really challenged the ways in which I think about poverty and oppression in relation to education, and the ways in which systems of education can reproduce systemic barriers and systemic inequalities. And for people who want to teach in high needs districts or any place where people are under-resourced, districts that are closing or in public school districts that may be struggling. I think that this is required reading. I think that this will really highlight some very important facts about, some very important thoughts about what it means to provide instruction and to provide a school space for people who are oppressed, and not just for teachers, but also for administrators and school districts. There's so much that is being written about people who are minoritized, and the writing about it is very deficitizing, and it positions people to be saviors. And I think that for anyone, whether you're a veteran or anyone else who wants to become a teacher, I think that these notions are absolutely, absolutely vital for you to look at prior to you engaging in this work.
This is fantastic. Well, Darris, thank you for the work that you're doing. Thank you for the impact you're having on the community and the world. And thank you for sharing your story with Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a pleasure. I appreciate it. Service.
Beyond the Uniform is written and produced by me, Justin Nasiri, with help from our Chief of Staff, Steve Bain, and our editor, Kathleen Dillon. We are an all-volunteer organization and would greatly appreciate your help in any of the following ways. First, spread the word. Beyond the Uniform has over 330 podcast episodes and 15 on-demand webinars, all offered for free. Help us spread the word on social media, at military bases, or whatever gets this resource in front of more men and women who need it. Positive reviews on iTunes go a long way towards this as well. Second, sponsorship. Beyond the Uniform relies on sponsorship to keep us going. There is so much more we'd like to do, but we don't have nearly the resources to do so. If you know of a company that would like to advertise in any way with Beyond the Uniform, please send them to beyondtheuniform.org. Third, donations. If you're in a financial position to donate, you can find more information on the support section of beyondtheuniform.org. At our website, beyondtheuniform.org, you'll also find 330-plus episodes categorized by industry, functional role, and more. You'll find a link for live events, typically 4 per month. You'll also find both free and for-purchase books that take a deeper dive on topics related to career growth. Thank you for your support as we aim to help members of the military and their families thrive in their post-military career and life.